This is History Repeating Itself. I'm Ben Orlando with my co-host, Red.
Hi. But before we begin, we have our Kickstarter campaign up and running, and we have $3,000 out of $5,000 to go with less than a week, or about a week at this point, I think. And so that means we absolutely need your help to meet our goal. So we're doing this so we can produce more shows more frequently. So if you want that, please donate.
You can find the Kickstarter campaign. You can find a link to the campaign on our website, historyrepeatingitself.com.
All right, back to it.
So for this series, we're going to explore how technology has changed the landscape of relationships, right? Machines, dolls, interfaces, and their effects.
Is technology damaging, enhancing, or replacing relationships altogether? What is it about us that makes certain options so appealing?
And, you know, a lot of these technologies are just getting started. What can we expect, and what kinds of questions should we be asking before there's no turning back? What are you doing?
Looking at the Real Doll homepage.
Anything good?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there are so many choices.
Wow, look at that one. Like, they're pretty real.
Yeah, that is really real. However, the proportions are not.
Okay, but they, okay, I mean, they look realistic to me.
Yeah, that, I would agree with you. Look at the guy.
Okay, maybe that one's not so real.
Yeah, why is there such a difference with the guys and the girls?
The guys and the girls. All right, so I think a lot of people aren't familiar with the Real Doll,
what it is. That is correct. So a Real Doll is
a life-sized, posable silicone doll, which is also anatomically correct and can be used as a sex toy.
That's Matt McMullen, founder and CEO of Abyss Creations, maker of the Real Doll. And when Matt says anatomically correct, he means the doll actually has an internal skeleton. Every part of the body is
open for business.
Open for business. And actually, a Real Doll can weigh up to 100 pounds and stand 5 feet 10 inches tall.
And as Matt mentioned, the dolls can be used for sex, right?
Can be.
But they can be much more depending on who you talk to. Recently, I talked with a guy named Dave Cat. Dave Cat is 41 years old, and he's married to a Real Doll. And just to note, I'll be asking a few questions in the next segment, but it's mostly Dave Cat.
I really am not looking for an organic partner anymore. And what organic women do, like, approach me, I always have in the back of my mind this, like, well, okay, what exactly do you want? What, you know, what's your angle? So, Shidore, I got her from Abyss Creations. She is a Real Doll. I got her back in 2000. In 2012, I got Elena Vostrikova, who is a doll made by a Russian company called Anatomical Doll. And my third doll, Muriel Noonan, was made by a company called Textile Doll out of Latvia. And I got her last year. I had been getting in and out of the dating scene for quite some time, more or less since, like, you know, high school, that sort of thing. And things just weren't working out for me. I'm not what you would call really a persuasive individual, especially when it comes to dealing with people on an interpersonal basis, and especially when coming to deal with the opposite sex. Since my father was always and still is sort of a forceful individual, I never wanted to be that sort of person that wanted to force myself onto someone else. So it's like, you know, I didn't want to, like, constantly bother or pester. So I'd been in an affair with a girl, and we're still good friends, but she knew back then that, like, I was interested in artificial people. One day, this would have been around 1998, 1999, she was at work, and she had stumbled across the Abyss Creations website. And she was like, well, Dave Cat, you know, I know that you're really interested in, you know, artificial people, and I know that you're still looking to get a girlfriend, so why don't you take a look at this? And she showed me the Abyss Creations website, and I was just like, oh my god, this is incredible. This is pretty much everything I've ever wanted. $5,000 is a lot of money, so it took me like a year and a half to actually save up to getting Shidore Kuroneko, and it was money well spent and a wait worth waiting for. But Shidore has fulfilled a lot of needs, both sexually and, more importantly, in a companionship, in a creative sense. I mean, Shidori's my wife, as far as I'm concerned. I got Elena to basically keep Shidori company whenever I was out of the house, you know, so that it's two girls being able to, like, do whatever, catch up on stuff, and just be synthetic people together, that sort of thing. And, of course, both of them are bisexual. Muriel is weird, because it's just, like, I'm just starting to get used to the concept of a textile doll. I mean, she's made by a company called Textile Doll, and she is a cloth doll. Muriel is more of a, we consider her of a flatmate, you know. She's not really a sexual being, although she is made for sex. She's not really a sexual being, though. So she's just kind of standing, holding up the wall right now, you know. I am definitely planning on getting others. The fellow idolater had once pointed out very astutely that the more dolls you get, the less attached you get to them. And I am worried that that may become an issue. One of the things, basically, I think that defines me as being Dave Cat is just the whole thing of, like, unlike a lot of people, a lot of extroverts, I could say, you know, I don't mind being alone. I'm often wrapped up in my own thoughts, for better or for worse. And when you have an organic partner, unless they're extraordinarily tolerant, there's going to be instances where you want to be alone and work on whatever it is you're working on, or be by yourself, or be alone with your thoughts, or read a book, or whatever. And that other person is going to be like, well, you can't be alone all the time. I mean, what about me? You're neglecting me. You know, we're supposed to be a couple, et cetera, et cetera. With a synthetic partner, I mean, you can have your cake and eat it too, because basically you can be alone when you want to be, and you can have a companion whenever you want to have a companion and not, you know, be made to feel guilty that you're ignoring them, that sort of thing. Although it has to be said, when I don't pay attention to any of them, I do feel guilty. So your interests will always be their interests, or they won't have any interests at all. It depends on how far you decide to, like, make their personality. There's just a lot of obstacles that you won't ever really encounter. I mean, there'll be other obstacles, but, like, the obstacles that most organics encounter in relationships, you won't really ever have with a synthetic partner.
Well, that's interesting. So you get a doll because you can do your own thing without feeling guilty, but then you develop a relationship with the dolls and you feel guilty anyway. It seems like it's unavoidable.
Yeah, I mean, there's an amount of personification that, like, any idolater will have with their doll. Some people really don't assign a personality to their dolls, and that's perfectly fine. I mean, they still fill the void, a niche or whatever. But then there are people like me where it's just like, you know, my doll is my partner. Pictures alone, when you look at a picture of a doll as it is, you're going, wow, they really look realistic. I mean, they're incredibly realistic. And then when you see one in person, the verisimilitude is incredible. You know, it's depending on what company makes them, of course. But I think personification, for one, is a natural way to, like, treat a doll like a person, because it's just like, I mean, you can't really have something that looks like an organic human being and, like, with the incredible realism that they have and not want to feel affection towards them, to, like, want to take care of them, you know, be interested in them, or want to, you know, just interact with them. From coworkers, I haven't revealed my secret yet to them, which is, you know, it's a matter of gauging them. But I mean, it's really a matter of gauging anyone. My family knows, all my friends know, anyone that knows me on more than a surface level knows, and of course a lot of people on the internet know, and they just know me on a surface level. But it's just like, you know, being out of doors with a person that is made of rubber and is a bit unwieldy, and that, you know, 99% of the time people are going to immediately associate as being a sex doll. I live in an apartment, and the way it's built, it's like, if I were to take any of my dolls outside of our flat, I would have to pass at least 2 units in either direction. And it's just like, I mean, I don't think my neighbors know that, you know, the ladies are living with me. And it's just like, I don't want to, like, be like, hey, guess what, you know, and have a person who is maybe a little more puritanical than myself say, well, there's this guy in this one apartment that's got these dolls, yeah. You know, so I wish I could try. And another thing, I live on the second floor, and the lightest doll is 11 pounds. That's Muriel. She's made out of fabric. The second lightest doll would be Elena. She's close to 60 pounds, and Shirore comes in at close to 80 pounds, and that's a lot of weight. I find a lot of people don't really understand this until I like to sit down and explain this to them, because it sounds like, oh God, he thinks his dolls are real. Well, it's like, for one, I define real as being anything that you can perceive with any of your senses. You know, it's like, yeah, my dolls are real because I can see them, hear them, not really hear them, but you know, smell them, taste them, touch them. You can't do that with a unicorn. So a unicorn isn't real, but a doll is. But, you know, one of the other reasons I have a doll is that I've always had a creative streak, and you could find this with a lot of idolaters, is that they've got some sort of creative something inside them that they want to get out of them. And a doll is a perfect way to do that, because, I mean, they're basically blank canvases. I liken Shidore's personality, or Elena's personality, or Muriel's personality to, like, basically creating a character, like an author creating a character for a book. It's the same thing, only in three dimensions.
And do you ever forget that these are dolls?
Yeah, it is a weird duality. I recognize that, yes, they are artificial. They're sculptures, they're works of art, they're dolls, they're toys, they're things, ultimately. But to me, they are beings in their own right. Not really sentient, but I pretend that they're sentient. You know, they're people. I mean, Shidore, she's really got two backstories. One backstory is that she has an English mother and a Japanese father. She was born in a district of Tokyo. They moved to part of a greater Manchester area when she was like 8 or 9 or whatever. So there's like a whole backstory with that. But then she's also aware that she is a doll. I like to play both of them off, like, you know, okay, she's got a backstory, but then I also have Shidore tweeting things like, oh, well, you know, I couldn't wake up this morning, so I pulled my face off and shook it and put it back on. So it's a duality, but I guess it kind of works. As far as like the gray area, as far as like what I would personally want my own gynoid version of Shidore is just, I mean, she'd have to be able to walk and be able to hold conversations with me and move by herself, that sort of thing. I think the biggest thing that would be a crucial element is that she would never really want to leave me as far as like a partnership. Because, I mean, you can get that with an organic partner. I mean, so there's really not an advantage to having a synthetic partner if they were able to leave. So. And that is a huge gray area in and of itself, because it's just like, when you say something like that, well, specifically when I say something like that, it's like, well, isn't that kind of slavery? But see, the thing is, too, it's like, even if you are in a partnership with a fellow organic, you wouldn't want them to leave either. So it's just like, I mean, where does one draw the line there?
So have these relationships changed the way you interact with people?
Yeah, I'd say so. For one, and this is echoed in a lot of idolaters' conversations as well, I'm not as edgy/anxious as far as finding a partner. You know, it's like before it was just like, God, can I talk to her and can I actually speak to her without like seeming completely insane or messed up? And like, oh my God, you know, there isn't that I've got to get a girlfriend vibe. I'm still attracted to organic women. I don't pursue them because there's a wild card aspect to it that is just like, well, she may look great, but she may be just kind of cranky or taken or whatever. But as far as like, you know, a doll, you know where you stand. And having them in my life has opened up a lot of doors to meet loads more people and go places that I'd never considered going before. And I've met a lot of interesting people and made a lot of great friendships because of Shidore and Elena and Muriel, etc. I think one of the takeaways that I would like to try to get people to understand is that, like, you know, synthetic humans aren't just for sex. And it would be really, really awesome if people would stop thinking of them in that context. It's a lot of people don't even realize that gynoids and androids exist, or dolls for that matter. And when they do see them, they're like, oh God, can I have sex with that? As far as I'm concerned, it's like looking at any human being on the street as purely a sexual object. And also in the same context, it's also like looking at like a really cool piece of technology and thinking, can I have sex with that? I would hope that, you know, people would be able to say, this is something that can benefit society as a whole, instead of, like, you know, people racking their brains and spending a huge amount of money or emotion or time trying to find the one person in their life. They can maybe have a studio or a factory create that person, and that's a whole lot of things that they don't have to worry about anymore. They can, you know, be a little more well-adjusted because they're not constantly on the make looking for someone. They'll save a lot more money in the long run, and in the long run they'll be happy because they'll have someone.
I mean, listening to that is fascinating, to hear how something like a real doll has benefited Dave Katz so much. The last thing that he says is that this could potentially, and he wishes and he hopes that this benefits society as a whole, because we would have to, you know, we spend so much emotional energy finding somebody, and that we'd be more well adjusted because we wouldn't be searching for somebody. And I actually think the opposite is true, that someone that is well-adjusted is someone that can navigate the emotions that organic communication with another human being naturally brings up.
I mean, is it something about our society that, you know, we're dealing with that we probably shouldn't have to?
I think you raise a really good point, because his need for, you know, his need to not be left, right? That is the most fundamental aspect of our humanity.
But just about all the social games you have to play and all of these interactions that maybe shouldn't be necessary, you know, like
texting,
but just the rules of going out and dating and having to follow these certain procedures, and then just the built-in embarrassment and shame that's part of our society, you know. And ideally that wouldn't be there, but that is there, so that's what all of us have to deal with.
Yeah, and I think there's an inevitable amount of shame and embarrassment and struggle that comes with it.
Obviously, this brings up a lot of debate, a lot of issues for us and for a lot of people. But we're going to talk about this more in other episodes.
Yes, much more on this debate and other research and hearing from other experts to come.
On the next episode of History Repeating Itself, we'll look at some of the most interesting interfaces for sexual or romantic relationships.
Their system was composed of an input device and an output device. And the output device was the real touch, and the input device was the joystick. It was kind of a cross between a dildo and like an Apple accessory in its industrial design.
And we'll explore a few parallels in history, including the origins and evolution of the female vibrator.
Created in the 19th century, they were seen as medical instruments to cure what was perceived as women's hysteria, which was women who medical doctors thought had too much desire. Basically, they would bring women to orgasm with their hand. They invested heavily in these early mechanical instruments, electric instruments called vibrators, which made their work much, much easier. And one could argue that those were some of the earliest sex robots.
We've reached the end of the first episode in this series. If you enjoyed it, share it with a friend, and better yet, check out our Kickstarter campaign.
And our cool rewards.
We have until the end of the month to meet our goal. You can find the link on our website, historyrepeatingitself.com.
Special thanks to Dave Katz and Matt McMullen.
And thanks to Diana Pozzo and Murray Miller-Young, who we heard from at the end of the show.
Links to their websites and blogs are on our homepage. History Repeating Itself, as always, was written and produced by Ben Orlando. Music by Ben and myself.